The idea of the slash is a pretty worn out Hollywood trope, but Keegan Allen is legitimately an actor slash photographer slash musician slash, I don't know, all around awesome dude. Keegan's one of those people who gets super excited about little things, and whether you cared about them or not beforehand, you cannot help yourself once he gets going. Senior writer James Stacy and I sat down with Keegan in Los Angeles, and you'll probably be able to hear it, but I had a big stupid grin on my face the entire time we were talking. I'm your host, Stephen Pulverant, and this is Hodinkee Radio. This week's episode is brought to you by Tudor. Stay tuned later in the show for a look at the Heritage Black Bay Chrono, a new take on one of Tudor's most iconic watches. You can also learn more at TudorWatch.com. All right, thanks so much for joining us, Keegan. It's good to have you here today.
Thank you so much.
And we've also got our man James Stacy here.
Everyone.
From Vancouver.
Mm-hmm.
I think last time we saw each other was recording Talking Watches, wasn't it?
Yes, I did a Talking Watches episode, and it was outstanding. But there's a couple of things I need to clarify now after reading through the comments, because some people took a lot of what I said a little bit too far.
Okay.
And I want to just say one thing. So my Mickey Mouse watch that my uncle gave me, after he passed away. Okay. So I can't go and ask him except if there's a seance of some sort that I can reach out past that realm. But I mean, a lot of people are like, oh, that's the same thing that's said in National Treasure or in the Da Vinci Code or something. Not taking yourself too seriously. Like he wears a Mickey Mouse watch or he wears some sort of a watch. And I'm like, oh my God, maybe it was like his own thing that he got from that movie. But I have no way of asking him. So just right off the bat, never knew about that because I just didn't even know. And when I was looking through the comments, I just was like, why have people hung up on that? Like, move to the next thing. but I want to also say that it was so fun and I loved it. And it gave me a new appreciation for my watches that I have. And I'm wearing one of the watches in that.
Which one are you wearing?
I'm wearing a 1675 Blueberry on the Hodinkee aged leather strap.
That's one of my favorite straps we make.
It's so beautiful and
it's an incredible watch.
And it goes so well with the stainless steel on the back. And I'm not trying to plug Hodinkee. Honestly, like I got this and I love it. And Ben brought up last time, there's not enough people under 30 that wear leather straps anymore. They just don't.
True.
In fact, when I wear this, I'm just like, wow, it's actually really cool. And my friends were like, oh, but what if you jump in the ocean or what if you jump? Because I go swimming all the time. Or what if you go and you want to go to the gym? I go, you take it off and you're a man and you just take it off. Or you're a woman and you just take it off. Like just utilize the watch for what it is. Obviously, stainless steel has a different, you know, there's a different thing.
It's a different thing.
Yeah.
I'm the only jerk here not wearing a GMT today.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Yeah. But you're bringing something to the party.
It's all right. I'm not upset about it, but you're wearing the Rolex GMT, and James is wearing the Tudor Black Bay GMT.
Yeah, the new Black Bay GMT,
mm-hmm.
Which is good. I'm liking it a lot.
Yeah?
Yeah, I have to give it back to you before I head home.
Oh, that's true. You do. You do. Tudor will eventually need it back.
I'll miss it. It's a cool piece.
And you're doing that write-up on it that's coming soon on, or will have already been out at this point.
Yeah, but probably.
But definitely go check it out.
It's a video.
We talked about how there are some things that you love about it and some things that, you know, are just part of the experience of wearing it. Not so much a con, but an experience.
Yeah, for sure.
What do you think, Egan, about seeing it for the first time?
I think it's beautiful and amazing. And I always look at watches from a standpoint of how will they age? Like it's just like buying a car sometimes where you have these like silly speedometers or like some of the, you have like a window into a monitor. Some of these cars have like computers. Over time, it's not going to be as classic as the dial that's on this Tudor will age beautifully. It's so gorgeous and matte and the lume is gorgeous. The indicators are pretty. The hand's cool. I think it's a great watch. It's great for the price point. And even the bezel I was saying is so cool because it's not blue. It's like a
navy,
like a navy gray. Yeah, it's really cool.
Yeah, It's very different. I mean, seeing it side by side with a vintage Rolex GMT, they've obviously got some things in common, but they feel like substantively different watches despite having a lot of things in common.
Yeah, and your top, the I think it is it acrylic then on top.
Or it's a sapphire, it's just
a sapphire box. So, yeah, and I have this little acrylic that Eric Coog gave me, which is for this watch, so I don't have the little bubble. I believe it's called a Tropic 38.
Yeah.
I should know
this.
The
lower dome. It's not the big super dome from the super dome. Sea Dweller. This is like the lower.
And it's funny too. I think it's a Tropic 39. I don't know right now because I have a Tropic 39. I think the bigger one is the 39. Okay. I have that on my red 1680 because I love looking. I lost all hope for this, for the bubble, because I kept hitting it against stuff and, you know, but this looks really cool with the raised glass. So yeah, check it out. If you're at home and you want to see it, go. When is it out, or is it already out? And
it's in stores now.
I would go check it out.
They just started hitting retailers, right? Like a week or two ago, when we're recording this.
And it's hefty. It's a hefty. There's a weight to it that feels. I mean, some people have their opinions on heft. I think it feels like a luxurious heft. It's not a bulky heft.
No, I'd agree. Yeah. It's not. I wouldn't call it bulky at all.
Yeah, it's great.
So, Keegan, you mentioned going back to your talking watches, and I was reading through the comments again yesterday, and I noticed one of the things that when you said it, I was there when we shot the episode off camera. One of the things you said when we recorded was that you wear your watches when you sleep, and people seem to get really hung up on this.
Yeah,
like why in the world would you wear a watch when you sleep? So why do you wear watches when you sleep?
Well, it's so sonically pleasing because for example, I don't know. The microphones can't pick it up, but I just put my watch next to the microphone for those who can't see us, which is everybody. But the watch has, certain watches have different tonal pings that happen. The Pateks have a different sound. Even like my Patek, my 5164A, when I move, you can hear the wind happen. It's almost like, it's almost silly how loud that watch is when it's next to your ear. But I love that chime. It's a chime. It's not a tick. There's no ticking. And some watches are nice ticking, but I don't like that. I like the Rolex kind of like, it has like this little miniature sound that is almost white noise in the background. It puts me to sleep. And sometimes it's not so fun to wear it if you're sleeping next to somebody. You bash them in the head with your watch. But or you bash your face by accident, like you just go boom, hit yourself in the face. But yeah, I do love sleeping with my watches on, and all of them. In fact, sometimes if I can't sleep, I put them all on my wrist. No, I'm just kidding. That would be just terrible. But yeah, and some people think that's mad, and some people are like, oh, I'm used to doing that because I travel all the time. I mean, I'm all over the country. I just got off of a massive book tour for my photo book, and well, by the way, thank you guys so much for having me on the show and being able to talk about what my passions are. A lot of people, I want to also clarify, a lot of people thought that I was just doing this to promote my book. No, Hodinkee, the passions collide there. So
it was total coincidence, the timing. We happened to be out here in LA. The book was coming out.
And I was like, I have a photo book and everybody shoots Leica and everybody's like into photography. Like, let's do something. And it was really, really amazing how that all worked. And I think there is a simpatico of Hodinkee with fine art, you know, that's just the way it is. Hodinkee isn't just watches. It's everything and for everybody. So I did enjoy that aspect as well.
Can we talk about the book for a minute?
Yeah, absolutely.
Can you, for people who may not know, can you tell us what the book is, what your motivation was, and just kind of introduce people to the idea?
Yeah. So I was a photographer from the very young age. Around age 9, I got a really great camera from my dad that I borrowed and never gave back. And I started shooting all over town. And as a kid, you shoot
And you're
everything.
From here, right?
I'm
from
Los Angeles. Yeah. And I did my first book called Life, Love, Beauty. And it was a national bestseller. It was so well received. And it was, behind the scenes photos from various productions I was on, as well as existential photographs that I felt were part of my teen angst years and my adolescent years and some of my young adult years in a way that was relatable and fun for people. And then I wanted to tackle my hometown, which is Hollywood. I wanted to go out and take photos. But as a kid, that's pretty daunting and scary, especially to do a fine art photography book. And it took me a while before I had the guts, I think, to go out and do a street photography book like that. But also something that was like, you know, a tangible look at Hollywood for anybody. People that have never been there, people that live there all the time, people that are just tourists that are visiting sometimes and only see the thin veneer of, you know, this city that takes itself so seriously and thrives on its vanity, needs to see itself at its best and at its worst. I always say this, but it's so true. It really needs that to survive. And that's kind of beautiful and disastrous. And within disaster, there is always beauty. And I wanted to bring a photography book from my point of view without being, without telling people how to feel, but let the images speak for themselves of a city that I grew up in. So Hollywood just came out in April. I've been touring all over the country with it, and it's been really, really fun. And in fact, I want to bring this up. A lot of people come up to me at book signings, lots of people, guys and girls, and they go, I saw your Talking Watches, and I came to literally because I saw it on Talking Watches, I came and I wanted to see it. What's Wrist Check? And they're like, they're watch people.
That's pretty cool.
They came that out of the woodwork. Came out of the Watchworks, LA Watchworks. but it was really great. It made me really happy. Yeah. And I there was a couple of times where that would happen and they would be like, move along. And I'm like, hold on, we're talking watches. And it was like very serious.
Yeah. I mean, one of the things I found really fascinating, we've talked about this a little bit, but you know, I know in general, you're a Leica shooter. Mm-hmm. And you know, James and I are both photographers, both pretty into camera gear. And I know a lot of the images you shot for Hollywood were not shot on your Leica and were shot kind of in a way that some people might find surprising. Do you want to tell us about that?
Yeah. So there was two different unique styles that I employed for shooting Hollywood, and I will continue to use to shoot most of my photography books. Of course, I have, you know, a Leica M6 that I shoot some Portra 400, 800, sometimes expired Ektar 100 and Tri-X. And then I have an M9, which is the amazing collaboration between Kodak and Leica from 2009 when Kodachrome was completely gone. If you guys don't know, look up what Kodachrome is. It's amazing. The last, I think the last roll of film was shot by Steve McCurry. Yeah. I almost said Brett Curry,
I think we're going to see him tonight.
But Steve McCurry shot the last roll of Kodachrome. And now we're getting to the real meat and potatoes of all of my photography is shot on a throwaway CVS camera. Because, or Walgreens, or you go to Duane Reade, or you go to, what is it, Come and Go. A Come and Go's, or sometimes we'll have weird, like waterproof cameras. But I love them because it gives this classic tapestry and timelessness to your photography. And then you just go to a 1 hour photo, develop it, scan it, and it's amazing. And it's not like the fuckboy Terry Richardson look. It's like really good. By the way, can I use the F word like that?
Yeah, you can absolutely use the F word.
Sorry, I won't do it ever again. Mom, if you're listening, earmuffs, I'm so sorry. Yeah.
And so you've been out on tour. How long have you, I mean, how many days were you out on the road? How many cities have you visited? What have kind of people's reactions been since the book has such a sense of place?
Yeah, people have been really, really responding well to it. And I enjoyed it when I was overseas and talking to people that have never been to Hollywood and had no idea what Hollywood is, except that they learn to feel from the movies. And that's all that people would say is, you know, I watch tons of movies and TV shows, and I've watched your show, or I've watched this guy's show, or watched this movie. And all I know is Hollywood is that place that puts out content. But when you get here and you're a tourist, it's like you're in an animal zoo. You're like scared, you know, it's scary. You don't want to leave. There's like four blocks that's like safe to walk, and then that's, you know, that's it. But there's so much more to Hollywood that makes it this beatific splendor that so many people don't know about unless they live here or they have a local like walk them through. And so with the book, what I did was, it was kind of like I took whoever the reader is, I took them by the hand and like pushed through the people and like showed them a very specific local Hollywood book from a standpoint in which anybody could view. And so people have been obviously like very strong opinions, lots of, and mostly positive. I haven't really had any negative opinions, but a lot of empathy. A lot of people have a lot of empathy because this book forces you to make eye contact with people, which a lot of people don't do anymore when you're on the street or around strangers, especially in Hollywood. Mm-hmm. And like I said before, it's a city that thrives on being seen. So a lot of these street performers, a lot of these people that are walking down the street, famous actors, people divert their eyes because they don't want to be noticed. They don't want to be seen. Or they are like out there like, look at me, experience me, appreciate me. And it gets like, then people get emotional because they see that. And they're like, why do I feel something? I'm like, because it's what we miss. We miss out on that. I had not to segue, but I had an interesting situation recently where Father's Day just came by. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if everybody that's listening will understand this, but some people will. If you've lost a parent and you're very close with them, Father's Day is a tough time. But I was like kind of in my own world. It was spot Father's Day, and I was like, you know, doing my normal thing of like I was hiding away. And this woman came over and she was like, excuse me, like, can we take a photo of you right now? And I was like kind of emotional. I was like, you know, right now is just not the time. And she's like, oh, well, can you please like just do it? You kind of like, it would be really nice for these people to get a photo. And I was like, it dawned on me. It's like you miss out on the person sometimes, even if you take out the celebrity aspect, you miss out on the moment with people if you don't take the time to experience and look at them and say like, okay, I'm here, I'm present. And so much of our environment now is like on our phones or taking selfies. Like even before I did this podcast, I'm like, here I am at Houdinki, selfie. But it's important sometimes to remain present and recognize that, I mean, I'm going to bring it back to time. Time is not as tangible as just holding a watch. Yeah. It goes by so quickly. And it's important to take those moments. And I think the book kind of employs people to do that for themselves in their everyday life.
And was the decision to go film for the entire book purely because you like the effect, you like the outcome, or is it a statement against some things being easy and not being as valuable using digital or fighting the, oh, that's a nice picture, you must have a great camera sort of aspect of the hobby?
That's what everyone carrying a camera loves to hear, right?
Yeah. I know, yeah. Right?
You must have a great camera.
Yeah, it's the best.
No, it's a myriad of all of those things. It's like a susurrus of showing different sides of you know, photography, social, this social aspect of it, humanity, empathy, and culture as well, like American culture, Hollywood culture. It's a different thing. You know, you go to some of these smaller towns and, you know, there's none of that. It's like, it doesn't exist. And then you go to Hollywood and people are like shook. Or you go to Las Vegas, people are shook. You go to New York, people are shook. They're like, what is this? And it's it's really an interesting byproduct of the environment. And and I love photography and I love telling stories. And I think the book kind of tells a really great linear story that's timeless and classic.
That's cool. I mean, it's so interesting anytime you get a chance to pick up a photo book that's constructed that way and constructed as a narrative, because so much of how we share images today is, you know, it's on Instagram, it's on social media, it's one image at a time. It's usually in a mix of things that are coming from other places. It's really disjointed, you know, and it's a big thing in the watch community too. And, you know, we're constantly sharing wrist shots and, you know, posting stuff on stories and selfies with other collectors. But having that chance to really use images to tell a story is different. And I mean, I'm trying to think of examples of that being used in the watch world, but I'm kind of coming up a little blank. Can either of you guys
I can think of an example is like, you don't want a watch and I go on like, or I'm like, I don't want the 126710. I don't want the 126710. I don't want it. I don't need it. I already have I have two GMTs. I don't need it. And then you go on Houdinki and you guys have like a write-up about the Jubilee stainless steel, and I'm like, okay, well, I guess I want it now.
Sorry,
it's okay. But that's like that's the way it goes. You don't know what you want until you kind of feel it out and see it, and but it does work in that way. You guys are great storytellers, because until Houdinki came around, I just thought I was like this weird kid that was into like weird, like who, you like, take a moment here, listeners, if Hodinkee didn't exist, you would probably feel very alone. There would be like watch forums, but nothing that's like cool and like shows it to be okay to be into watches. It's like there's car clubs, but then you get into like, you get deep into car clubs and you realize that there's a Porsche car club and there's an electric car club and there's a Ferrari car club. And then you get even crazier. There's a Subaru car club. There's all these car clubs. And then there's like niche car clubs. But Hodinkee takes all of that and makes it okay, you know, and that never existed until Hodinkee. So I think that's an example right there of a story. You told stories for people to relate to. It exists and it's fun and comfortable. Yeah.
Well, that makes me happy. That's good to hear.
Yeah, Hodinkee's great. I love it. I wouldn't be doing it.
We didn't put him up to this either, man.
No.
That's not what I was expecting with that question.
But that's what I told you. That's why when I did Talking Watches, I was so elated. And afterwards, when I saw it, I was like so proud of being part of it because, you know, as a collector, that was another thing I want to touch on. People were like, oh, it's such an elitist thing. Well, no, it's actually not. What it is is you aspire to collect because you have a passion for it. There are some people that collect cacti, okay? There are some people that collect pins and spoons. And some of these spoons and these pins are so expensive. It's not elitist. It's just what they're into. And it takes a long time to get sometimes what you really want. It took me till I was 3 decades to get the watch that I really wanted.
And which watch is that?
The 5164A Travel Time. I saw it in 2011. But I mean, I'm just putting 3 decades because I couldn't get it when I was an infant because it didn't exist yet. but yeah, it took me since I saw it all that, you know, 7 years to be able to do it. And it took horse trading and, you know, trading up and trading down and making really bad mistakes. But and now that I have it, it's like, oh man, I'm so fulfilled and it's what I wanted. And, you know, of course there's going to be elitists in any realm. You know, there's the Bugatti Chiron, right? It's a $3 million car. There's some people that are going to work for their entire life and be able to never be able to buy that car, but they love it. And there's some people that are going to be like, eh, I'll just get it. It's like a second, it's like another Bugatti, I could get it. And of course that exists, but there's a passion with collecting watches that I've really enjoyed over the years. And
what is it specifically that kind of works to your level of the passion? Is it the minutiae, the small details, the design, the fact that there's a lineage, you could trace it back like you can with Leicas. You can go from an M10 today to its predecessor, its roots.
Well, it's an accessory that you can bring with you anywhere. That's the first thing. So as a man, it's only your shoes, your belt, you know, your shoes and your belt matter. But rarely is it like you wear there's not a lot of jewelry for men that's like,
right,
you know, what you want to wear every day, unless you're like Johnny Depp and you want to wear like 700 things to accessorize.
I'm going to pass on that.
Yeah, yeah, personally. Exactly. There's a minimalism to having a fine watch. And then the best part of it is there's sentimentality to it. So it will exist longer than any of us are around unless someone smashes it. And even then, it still exists within the world. There's still, and it's another tangible way to hold time and see it and feel it. And there's all these, there is minutia. There is things to get like obsessive about, like certain dials turn tropical. Certain dials have like, you know, wear and then turn like pumpkin colored and the patinas get really cool. Or some watches are brand new and they're really interesting.
Well, like even the watch you're wearing, right? Mm-hmm. Like the Blueberry GMT. Right. It's a watch that's all about details.
Right. And mystery too. That was the other thing is like, I don't even know if this watch even existed. I think it does. And that's what's so cool is like, there have been people that come up to me and they're like, so here's the thing I've heard about that watch. And I'm like, ah, dude, let's do it. You know, and it's so fun.
You know, you're gearing up for it.
Yeah. Let's sit down. Let's talk it out. Yeah. Let's talk it out. And of course, like, that's so fun. Like what? And if it's not fun, then don't do it. Like, don't get into that. You know, there's other things you can get into.
If you're buying watches and you're not enjoying them, you're doing it super wrong.
You're doing it wrong. Yeah. I wake up every day and I go, which watch am I going to wear today? And like, I put it on and it just makes me feel good. It's like a feel good thing. I look at my wrist. It's not just accomplishment. Some people get watches to, you know, commemorate a moment in their life that they've accomplished something. And that's great. Maybe not the thing that I've done with all my watches, sometimes I'm just like, I love this watch and I have a reason for it. But yeah, growing up, they were just tools. They were just like my dad had a beautiful vintage watch, and it was to him just a beautiful tool that he had. And it wasn't, you know, this big deal. And then there's some guys that make it into a big deal.
And you mentioned your dad a minute ago. I mean, does your passion for watches really, for you, go back to your dad? Is that where it started for you?
It goes back to all of the, I guess, all the people I've looked up to in my life, not just my father, not just my uncle, not just my manager, Conrad, who I look up to. He has a vintage, beautiful, like insane, beautiful 1680 that like is nuts. And it's like ghosted. And he didn't even know that it was like that great until I came over one day and I'm like, I'm sorry, I'm like sweating because what are you wearing? Like, how long have you had this for? And he's like, I've had it forever. And I'm like, what? Like, and I see this thing and I'm just like, do you realize what you have? You know? And he's like, whatever, I swim with it. And he, you know, it's like all of the people that I've looked up to, even my teacher I believe in like sixth grade, she wore a beautiful vintage Datejust. And I remember it. When I was in sixth grade, so it just shows you like the mania started really young.
Yeah, you wasted no time.
Yeah, and it wasn't like that I looked up to these people because of the status symbol of having a fine watch. It's because like it was part of them. Like when they walked into the room, they had that on. It was like part of them. And brands have done a great job of putting watches on people as like the stigma of like, this is success. Like Tiger Woods gearing up to the hole. And look at his wrist. There it is. Or like Federer with his, you know, what is the new watch that just came out? The new jet setter kind of watch.
Yeah.
The stainless steel sky dweller. Like, you know, all of that stuff's great and it's amazing. But you know, watches have a way different placement for me in, it's just part of like who you are. It's like, it's beautiful.
And now a word from our sponsor. James, when I say Tudor Black Bay Chrono, what's the first thing that comes to mind for you?
Well, nothing that came to mind was good. That's not good. I wanted to live in that moment, and it let me down. Distinctive design. Definitely the blend between your typical chronograph's elements with that Black Bay design.
Right. You've got the snowflake hands, but then you don't have a typical dive bezel. You have a tachymeter bezel.
Fixed steel.
Exactly. And then under the hood of this watch, you have a Caliber MT5813, which is both chronometer certified and has a silicon balance spring.
For sure. Easy wearing. It looks great and a great movement.
If you want to see one of these for yourself, you can go visit your local authorized retailer or you can go to TudorWatch.com to learn more. Let's get back to the show. On Talking Watches, you mentioned that getting the Patek was kind of like getting your grail. What's it like for you knowing that you aspired to this thing and now you have it? What does that do for that sense of aspiration and kind of like progress?
Oh, that's a great question, actually. I thought about that too. It was completion in something that like, the passion didn't die away. And I was worried that it would, you know. You think about some of these unattainable watches, like, don't get me wrong, like an RCO. You think about getting one, right? And then wearing it every day and feeling like you, like, get to a place where you could wear something like that and wear it every day and not really care about it. Does the passion die off? For me, my passion, it accelerated it even to another degree because now I have what I wanted and I can now sit with it and sit pretty with it and be like so grateful that I own it. And the beauty of having watches like that is you own it, but you shuffle off this mortal coil one day and the watch continues on its journey. And who knows how long that journey is. That this Patek that I have in my life could be around in like 600 years. And I don't even know how many lives it will have with others. It's just a really cool thought of something that's timeless, that tells the time.
Yeah.
And it's that simple.
I mean, I wonder, James, do you have any watches that were like that for you where the anticipation of getting it was almost so much that you like didn't quite want to get it because you were worried about it?
No, I don't think so. I think I'm like fairly thoughtful when it comes to my process of like selecting whether it's camera gear or watches or whatever. But yeah. I know like I bought a Explorer 2, the 16570.
Nice.
For my 30th. But I remember when I first wanted that, I was reading a book by an American alpinist named Ed Visers. He was the first American to do all 14 8,000 meter peaks without oxygen. God. It's a pretty big feat.
That's
a 4 minute
major.
Mile for the sport and a big deal. And he wrote in the book that like he wasn't obviously not that much into watches, but he was involved with Rolex at a corporate level and he'd seen this white dial. And like he didn't even say that it's an Explorer 2, but what other white dial?
Right.
Would it have been from that age? And then later on, I now have like the ad in my office.
Oh yeah,
with him at the top of a piece of K2, one of the hardest climbs that he did. And I think that kind of storytelling, like even though that's somebody else's life, I think that there's something like interesting in that you kind of can bring with you with that product. And maybe you see Brad Pitt wearing a watch that doesn't really do that much for me much, but something like an Ed Visers, or we've been looking into all sorts of stuff for an upcoming magazine issue.
Yeah.
To some try and cool connect. Stuff. Yeah. And you find these incredible stories that are connected with these, department store products to a certain level, like even a Rolex or something, it sits in a display case and a lot of people buy it. And then it goes through, let's say, a boring life, but sometimes it exists in a more interesting life as well.
That's such a great example too, because there are the watches are capable of actually fulfilling their functions as
completely.
Well. Like spelunkers are they're in the dark and they're like, what time is it outside? Right.
Yeah.
And they can see with no light, they know, and it functions. And that's like the other cool thing is like, we both have these GMTs and like, we could tell what time it is in Bali, in Sydney, in like all around the world. You don't need to you have everything on your wrist. You don't need anything else.
And like at an even cheesier level, and it's something that, we've been talking about with this week on the wrist for this tutor, is like, I love a travel watch because there's a certain amount of it suggests freedom, mobility, experience.
There's something so romantic about them.
It's definitely romantic. And I know it sounds cheesy. And like, if you're listening, I don't know why you'd be listening to this if you're not especially into watches, but if you're not especially into watches, this sounds ridiculous. But like, I love the idea of a watch that does multiple time zones because you're considering home, where you came from, where your roots are, but you're finding new places. You're seeing new things. You're swimming in an ocean you've never been in before. You're climbing a mountain you've never seen before, whatever that is. And I think it's that duality that makes us human. And when it's in a product, whether it's like an SUV that you could actually take off road to some adventure, or just take it to go get groceries, or a watch that could take you all the way around the world, and when you get back, every scratch has a little totem to where you went and how you did it.
Dude, so gnarly. I love it. Yeah.
It's the same thing for me though with a good camera, right?
Of course.
Like a camera pushes you to go out into the world. Like it's almost like having it is sort of like an assignment. Like you have the thing, now you have to go use it. And whether it's a travel watch or a camera or a great car, like these are things where you acquiring them is really the start of the journey, not the end of it. Like acquiring the object is just the impetus to then go use it and take it out in the world and experience things. And it's so exciting. And these objects that would otherwise just be hunks of metal end up pushing you to actually experience the world and meet
to
people.
To be human.
Yeah, to be human.
And I think it's worth, don't get it twisted. Like it's not a question of what the camera costs or the watch costs, or in the case, like you go get a hard body pickup truck for $200. It'll get you somewhere fun.
Yeah.
Or get a Seiko and throw a 12-hour bezel on it. You've got a GMT.
Exactly.
Go somewhere cool.
Yeah.
And with a camera, go to Walgreens. What one of those cameras cost?
They're $7.99
$8
at the most.
Perfect.
At the most.
It's not a money thing, and the travel could be expensive. Actually getting where you want to go is expensive, but that's the best money you'll ever spend.
Yeah, and then you look, that's the other thing. It's a companion to you. All these things are companion pieces to your art, to your living, and your capability and creation. It pushes you to just love your life a little bit more. I mean, I look at my watch and I remember all the times that I was like, where I was with it, and it's just so special. Like it's been with me.
Or do you ever get it where you're going back through Google Photos or whatever, and you catch a photo of yourself? It'll remind you, like, oh, 3 years ago you were doing this, and you're like, oh, I was on the other side of the world. And then in one of the photos, you can just see the corner of, and you're like, oh, I was wearing that watch. Oh, okay, cool.
Yeah,
it was with me for that one.
Yeah,
I have to say, I sold a GMT maybe six or 8 months ago to buy the watch I'm wearing now, and the hardest thing about selling it was knowing that like all the places I'd taken it, like giving up those memories and like not having that connection to the watch anymore was way harder than giving up the physical watch.
I understand that 100%. Yeah.
It is a weird mental state to attach that much meaning to a thing.
It's completely arbitrary.
Some company makes a million of a year.
Right.
Yeah. No, right. but it's your thing.
It's your thing,
you know?
Right.
Your memories are locked in there. Yeah, 100% I get it. And I love that. Yeah, totally. When I sold one of my GMTs to get I had a 16710. That I wish I wouldn't have sold. Yeah, and I wish I wouldn't have sold it. It was just beautiful, and I had a faded bezel from the owner before me had was like a deep sea fisherman in the Sea of Cortez. And so it was faded from the sea. It had that like salty look to it, and I just loved
so
it.
Good.
And I sold it to get my 1680 red. And when I sold it, I remember handing it over and like feeling this like gut punch of, oh my God, like it's the spirit of this watch is moving to somebody else. And mm-hmm. like, all I can do is just be grateful that I had some time with it, and that's it. And yeah. I put some time into it, and it's on its way. And who knows, you, one of the listeners right now, if you're wearing a 16710 Coke bezel that's like faded like it's in the Sea of Cortez and you just got it from someone, could be my watch out there.
It's funny how often that actually happens though, where yeah. like you know somebody who has a watch and then you hear that, oh, it went to this dealer and then that dealer and it made its way to so and so, and like you realize you're wearing this, like one person is wearing another person's watch and you know both of them and it's changed hands four times.
Yeah.
You know?
It happens a lot with cars too, right? People go back and actually look through the records of ownership.
Oh, yeah.
or like they find yeah. out from someone in a photograph like, oh, actually that was my car. And then they'll be like, oh no, I had that car until 74, but before me, David Bowie's manager had it. And then
right.
like, yeah, like sometimes there's some like wild stuff that happens where, and especially with the countries where the license plate follows the car, stays with the car. Then you have like a weird record that's in every photo, like a VIN's not necessarily visible in any photograph, but
oh, yeah.
but with the license plate, some weird stuff happens with the tying back histories of these vehicles.
Yeah.
That's super interesting.
It's amazing. Yeah. I do love that aspect of that it travels through time. With different people and it has all these lives and, you know, to be a fly on the wall. And I'm not saying that like all of our watches will eventually one day be regarded as like pieces in a museum. But I mean, you think about it now, like wristwatches haven't been around that long. I mean, they have, but they haven't.
And I mean, it's about a century.
Yeah, that's about it. That's it. And so in like about 500 years, some of these watches will be, I mean, they'll still be existing. They're not going to erode into dust, right? You know what I mean?
Right.
Unless we, you know, it depends on humanity, but you know, they'll be around and it's just cool to think about all the stories that they'll go through.
Totally.
Yeah.
Have you gotten anything new since we saw you last?
No, but I was like, well, no.
Anything that's close?
Close. I mean, I went and I'm on the kick to, I think we briefly talked about it before, but I really wanted to get a Tudor 58.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah.
Yeah. And like, I'm really like, I'm loving that little slim, that slim look on that body of that watch. It's really, really pretty and nice. And, kind of obsessive with it. And also of course I'm on this oscillation between like, I don't want it. I want it. I don't want it. I want it with the stainless steel, Pepsi. But I have a...
What has you going each way? What do you love about it? What don't you like about it?
Well, what I don't like about it is I already have a 16719.
Okay.
116719, sorry. BLRO, which is the white gold Pepsi GMT. And like a part of me was going to sell it to get... But then I'm like, no, there's no reason. I love that watch. And
that watch is now not being made with the black dial.
Right. Exactly. It's with a blue dial now,
blue
right?
Blue dial, yeah.
And I have my opinions on that, which, you know, I love the watch that they made for that year and in 2014 for Baselworld. And, yeah, it's tough to then go into a stainless steel Jubilee. And also what I think what has me not doing it is that so many ADs that I'm really close friends with are like, the watch is like so overpriced right now. And the price has been driven up even, it's to a point where it's like silly. If you're going to do it, obviously like no pressure, like go spend, you know, 20 grand on a watch that should, you know, is retailing for half that. But you know, it's beautiful. It's cool. Do I need it to fulfill like some sort of a void within me? No. Do I need it for like BDE? Like, no, I don't. But you know, over time, I think that watch will find its place on a lot of people's wrists.
I think so, too. I mean, James and I were talking about this the other day, and the waits with retailers are crazy. I mean, retailers are saying that unless you're a really good customer who's spending probably six figures or close to it per year, you're not getting one anytime soon.
Right.
And it seems a little crazy to be spending, you know, $100,000 on Rolex in a year.
Yeah, so either they're going to sell them for the list price, the $9,250 or whatever, but they're going to make you wait a long time.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Or they're not going to sell them for that price. They're going to put a markup on them and move them to the people who are willing to spend 17, 18, 20, whatever it is.
Yeah.
Right. I wonder what it's going to do to the Daytona market. I wonder if it'll impact it at all.
Because that's been the hot ticket?
Yeah. I wonder if anybody who's been waiting for a Daytona will say, if I'm going to have to wait, I'll wait for the new thing.
The trouble with all the stuff about feedback about Rolex ADs is it's all anecdotal.
Mm-hmm.
My AD
completely.
Says if you buy two, you can get one. Like, you can get two Daytonas, but you got to buy two. And they're going to take pictures of the serial numbers so you can't sell them.
Yeah,
and
it's
stuff.
Like the Wild Wild West now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There doesn't seem to
no
be any
regulation.
That's fair.
Yeah.
Yeah. And Rolex is never going to comment on anything.
No. So I think it all depends on who you know at your AD, if your AD has one. But I'm from Vancouver, and the general note in town is like, you can't just walk in off the street and get any steel sports watch from, from Rolex.
I always pop into Rolex stores in airports just to see.
Same. See what's there.
Because I always think, like,
that's
if
the
they
best
get
place.
A shipment, who knows?
Omega
know?
Always has crazy airport stores too. They'll get random stuff.
Right.
Wow.
So I always check, because my thought is always, if I see a Daytona, I mean, you kind of have to, right?
Yeah.
Like, I know enough people who want them and would be willing to pay above retail. You know, if you see one, you kind of got to snatch it up.
But yeah. Absolutely, I agree. I do that too.
I'm yet to find anything good. I've never seen a Daytona. I've never seen a, you know, ceramic Submariner. I've never seen any of the steel sport watches.
Really? You've never seen a ceramic Submariner?
Not in an airport.
Like an 11-40-60?
Yeah, not in an airport.
I guess you can't really find those. They're so hard to get.
They're so hard to get. That's the thing.
If you want to get the Batman, those really hard to find right
now.
Super hard to find.
Damn, dude. I feel like that's crazy to hear. Jeez, it makes me nuts.
I was at Galerie Lafayette in Paris a couple weeks ago with my wife. We were on vacation there, and I popped in we were in the store, and I was like, hey, you know what? I'm going to go by the Rolex counter and just see. They had almost no sport watches at all. And I think it's partially because of the tourist clientele that they're catering to, but it's all gold watches.
Wow.
It was pretty wild.
That's insane. So, and that's the other thing, is that part of me does want a stainless steel version of that watch to be able to, like, not worry. Because I wear my gold watch, and that's the one watch that I'm scared of when I wear it. Like, it's terrifying to me, because it is
What's
so
scary about it?
Well, because I already went through a gnarly thing with them where, you know, I don't want to get into my, like, whole therapy session about it, but it costs a lot to replace that bezel.
Okay.
And I had scratched it by putting on my seatbelt, and it was like a really, you would think, you know, these watches are super rugged, but because it's such a soft metal and it's gold, like, you got to be really ginger with that specific
especially
watch.
Especially white gold.
Yeah. So sometimes I'll wear it and I'll be like, you know, that was me putting my hand down really softly on the counter. But I won't do that with the white gold. I'll, like, hover my hand because I don't want it to scratch. So I just got to be really, like, careful with
it. Is it even fun to wear at that point?
It is. It still
is.
It's so fun. Yeah. It's so fun to wear.
Just only with sweaters where you can put it in the garage?
Yeah.
It's a
put
style.
Put it in the garage. I like that.
Yeah. But, like, yeah, no, I park it right there. But it's a statement piece. I mean, there's something very, there's a glint on it. You know, it has that. No one has it. I mean,
right.
Really. I mean, I think I was talking to Ben when we were at dinner last time. Ben and John are Ben Clymer and John Mayer and I were talking about how we are, like, kind of the only people that we know that have it. And that's it. Like, we haven't really been, I mean, unless there's somebody that knew is added to this tripod here, but that's it. Like, not a lot of people have that watch.
I got to ask, while we're talking Rolex, Rainbow Daytona.
So
I got to ask for Kara. Kara would want me to ask. So
no,
I have to ask.
Kara was obsessed with it.
Shout out to Kara.
She loved that.
She loves it.
Mm-hmm.
It's not for me. Like,
okay.
Now, if they gave it to me, it'd be for me. I would wear it.
Which color?
That's tough.
I don't know. There's a right answer.
Well,
I don't know.
There is a right answer.
Which would you want?
Yellow?
Okay.
I wouldn't be able to pull something like that.
I could pull it off. I think here's the sad part.
I think you gentlemen both underestimate yourselves.
I would look like a maniac. I of don't course. Know who the hell.
Of course,
like,
you would.
I'd walk. Can you imagine
a perfect rainbow
term,
Daytona?
A
of
rainbow
course you would.
Daytona that is like $100,000 like glint. Now here's the thing. If I started rapping, I'd wear it. I saw Post Malone walking down the street the other day, casual. And I was thinking he could wear
that's a
that
good name
watch.
Check for this podcast.
Yeah, casual. Yeah, but he walking down the street, I could totally see him wearing it. Any trap artist, 100%. There's a no brainer. It's the lifestyle choice. You're walking around, you know. But for me, I think I'm more like into classic looking watches.
You have fewer face tattoos.
I do. I'm missing a couple of face tattoos. Fewer, exactly. Cool. Is the best term. Yeah. If I do get one, I have to get a face tattoo.
Right.
And it's got to say something like nuts on it. Maybe just it'll just say nuts right under my eye.
Rainbow Daytona.
Rainbow Daytona under my eyes.
Young rainbow right
young
across
rainbow.
Right now.
Oh God, yeah, and it would go great with where I live. I live in WeHo, so it would be
perfect.
Even perfect.
Yeah.
Everybody would go, oh, there's young rainbow walking around. Terrible, I mean, terrible.
Sounds like you got a plan.
Yeah, we're doing this.
This is the next phase.
Yeah, but I don't know. Do you feel? I feel like you could pull it off. I know that.
I mean, I wear almost exclusively like really austere time only three hand watches, like which are mostly like 36 to 38 millimeters. It'd be a bit of a departure, but I would wear one.
My favorite thing is to think about that design team at Rolex, and they're like, we need to make a fully functional chronograph, but we need to make it like this, and they like unveil it. Whomst is going to put that on and go to the racetrack and fully function that watch? That's what I want to know. Is there a race car driver? I feel like Hamilton, like, what's his name? Lewis Hamilton?
Yeah. Mm.
He could wear it and it would be fucking sick. Yeah. It'd be so cool if he's in the pits wearing that watch. It would look still like a maniac.
There's something so cool about the fact that Rolex was like, we're going to make this completely over the top rainbow watch, but it's also a fully functional waterproof chronograph.
Like God, yes.
It is still at its core a Rolex sports watch, and it's absurd.
It's absurd.
Completely absurd, but it's great.
Yeah. I do love that. It's weird. Yeah, but Car could totally. She could wear it.
Yeah. We thought about starting a like GoFundMe to try to get her a Rainbow Daytona.
But, yeah. She wears a Royal Oak though.
She does. Yep. She's been wearing a Royal Oak lately.
That's amazing. I know I had to talk about watches of the past that I wish I didn't sell. I had a 15202 ST Jumbo and it was beautiful and I loved it. And I sold it to fund my obsession with my Patek. Oh, no, wait. Yes, that's what I did. I sold that and I got my Patek. And the Patek was a little bit more. But it took more time. But I remember selling that watch and being like, and it reminds me of the watch from the Thomas Crown Affair. So I was just like, I kept seeing Pierce Brosnan's face, like shaking his head in the background, like a ghost of
beautiful hair.
Yeah. By the way, I saw Pierce Brosnan walking down the street in Beverly Hills. And I've never felt, we didn't get starstruck, but there was a part of me that just stopped what I was doing. I acknowledged his presence walking down the street. He was watching wearing a beautiful Omega, I believe. And I remember like, that was where my eyes went to. I went, what watch is he wearing? And I remember thinking to myself, like, what do the cool guys wear? Cause he's so cool. He exudes this coolness. Yeah. Like
he's got a coolness about him.
It's a
for
cool
sure.
watch, a cool old Omega on. And yeah, I remember that. But yeah, when I was handing over the watch, he was there, sort of like a misty Pierce Brosnan, and he was like from the Thomas Crown Affair, and he's like, "No, what are you doing?" Yeah.
Any regrets?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah? Okay. I mean, we have regrets, but you move forward, and I'm happy.
It's kind
with
of part
what
of the
I
hobby,
have.
Right?
Yeah, and here's the reality. I don't regret it when I'm in the ocean swimming and I get out on a rock and the rubber band from the Patek, the Aquanaut, goes up. Or did you treat yourself at home? Treat yourself. Go and watch the new Paul McCartney Carpool Karaoke. It will make you so happy. It made me cry like 8 times because I just love him. And if you already love him, you'll love him so much more. If you don't know who I'm talking about, he was the singer of the Beatles.
it's really scary that we now have to qualify that. Right?
I know. Well, there's kids that are like, who is, like, I showed my friend and he has a kid and he goes, who's this guy? And what is he singing? And I'm like, kid, the Beatle, you know, anyway, but he was wearing a 5164A in it. Yeah. And I was like, I couldn't focus for like the whole 10 minutes that it started. It was a 23 minute segment. And in the 10 minutes, I'm just like, is he wearing a 5164A? Yeah. No, wait, is he? Is he wearing anything? And I'm like obsessed with it. Cause you know, he always wears the Aquanaut.
Right.
But, yeah, I mean, that's always cool. When you see someone that you look up to wearing a watch that you have is really cool. You know?
Yeah.
You're part of the same team. Hey, right. Guys. Like if I ever see him, I'll be like.
It's a secret handshake.
Yeah. It is. You know, it's really cool. Yeah.
But, for sure.
Yeah.
So something we like to do every episode to close things off is get a cultural recommendation from everyone. So it can be a book, a movie, a place you went recently, something to recommend that people go check out after the episode's over. So do you wanna throw us something?
Yeah, recently on my book tour, I've been walking around and checking out different places, and I was in Virginia recently, and I went to Harper's Ferry, which is where the Civil War started, and it was really crazy to be there and take photos and experience just walking on that soil and being in that small town and looking around, and it's still a fully functional little epicenter of it's like an attraction, you know. There's a lot of sugar everywhere though, so beware. Sugar's poison, by the way. I wanted to touch on this.
Oh, cool.
I didn't realize it until recently, but everything has sugar in it, and it's so subsidized within the Midwest and Middle America. When I went over there, I couldn't eat anything because it was like, they're like at Harper's Ferry, they're like, we have some specialty Civil War corn. And I'm like, what's in it? And they're like, corn and sugar. And I'm like, I literally can't eat that. Oh man, so much is terrible. That was fun. What is another thing? I was laughing about this earlier. Dark Crimes, which is Jim Carrey's new movie. Try and get through the first 20 minutes of it. That's a challenge to you, okay?
It's called Dark Crimes.
Dark Crimes. It has a 0% on Rotten Tomato. Okay? Now let me tell you something about this. I love Jim Carrey. He is one of my favorite artists, comedians. He's so talented and so woke. He's cool. He's weird. He's a little crazy, but man, is he talented. And you will watch this movie. And here's the thing, as an actor, I went and saw it with my friend Brett Dyer, who's on Jane the Virgin, and he like is another, he's like a Jim Carrey kind of guy. He's very funny. And we both were just like, what, why did he do? It's just so bizarre and it's so hard to sit through, but it's so fun to do that. Cause it's just like, Jim Carrey, what are you doing? But, yeah. And also Rick and Morty. If you haven't watched Rick and Morty, get through Rick and Morty immediately. Watch it 1,000 times. It's incredible.
Yeah, Rick and Morty's so good.
It's so
good. We may or may not have been watching some Rick and Morty
literally
before
just
recording.
Before you came through the door.
It's amazing. It's outstanding. It's definitely one of the best shows ever made in the history of television. And if you don't know what we're talking about, all of us that are listening, all of us that are on the podcast, watch it. And we all got Harvard master degrees just from watching it. So, yeah. And if you watch it, you'll understand what that means, because you'll be smarter around your friends. You'll realize that people don't have the mental capacity to keep up with you if you watch Rick and Morty. As far as a book that I recommend, been really getting into bicameralism. A really good book is The Origin of Consciousness and the Breakdown of the Bicameral Mind by Julian Jaynes. It's really nuts. And bicameralism is something that I got into because Elon Musk talks about living a simulation, and there's part of me that feels like ever since I started to recognize that there's like glitches within the simulation, basically bicameralism talks about the fact that origin is something that is evolutionary. It's an evolutionary thing. It's not as much of a learned trait as it is. It is more of a learned trait. There's a hypothesis that anything can maintain consciousness if given the opportunity to. There's a part of me that thinks that like humanity is this like cyclical thing that keeps happening, and the universe tries to experience itself through other things as well. So like maybe in like a billion years, like flowers will be at our standard. And like Rick and Morty kind of does this where the couches are eating pizza. Wait,
the chairs are eating
phones, yeah. And they're sitting on pizzas in one universe. Watch Rick and Morty, you understand what I mean. But
it all comes back to Rick and Morty.
There's multiverses, and it all comes back to Rick and Morty. But yeah, that's, I would recommend all of that stuff. And I'm trying to think of anything else. Yeah, I think that's it. Yeah.
Anything from you, James?
Yeah, for sure. I would recommend a podcast, which I think would be a great like foil to one like this. And it's a podcast called All Fantasy Everything. It's recorded here in LA in Glendale. And it's three comedians kind of, if you watch like the, or if you listen to Doug Loves Movies, a lot of these guys pop up on that sort of thing. And if you know the LA comedy scene, they're around. And they have on a guest, usually another comedian or another writer. And the whole idea is they pick a generally very esoteric or specific vein, and then they draft their choices. So the best five things to do if you had $1 billion. The best five celebrities you'd like to go on a date with on a Friday night. The best five, like most recently it was top five rap videos.
Sweet.
When you were growing up. Because they're all really deep into hip hop.
Mm-hmm.
But the thing that makes it special isn't really the picks. They're all super funny, and the show, the format of the show is really hilarious. It's the fact that especially the three hosts are really close friends.
Mm-hmm.
And so they're so supportive of each other's choices, even if they're terrible choices. And the charm level of the show so vastly outweighs its concept.
Okay.
And they've done a ton of episodes. It's super funny. And if you're normally listening to 99% Invisible or a podcast about watches or something like that, and you want kind of a foil, a palate cleanser, something like that, I think that All Fantasy Everything is absolutely one of my full-on favorite pieces of content that comes out every week now.
Awesome.
Sick. I dig that.
It's really fun.
Check it out.
Sweet. I'm going to recommend something that some people might be really mad at me for recommending, but I was listening to Bill Simmons does a podcast on the Ringer Network called The Rewatchables. And the most recent episode from when we're recording this was about The Devil Wears Prada. So I want to recommend anyone who has not seen The Devil Wears Prada, go watch this movie.
It's so good.
It's so good. And I remember I've seen it probably, I don't know, somewhere between 5 and 10 times. But I haven't seen it in probably 2 years, 3 years. And I forgot how amazing it is. And hearing these people walk through this movie, I forgot. It is just brilliant. And there's so many good performances in it. And it's amazingly written. And it's just like, you don't need to care about fashion at all. You don't need to care about what it would be like to work at a fashion magazine. You honestly don't even need to like kind of random comedy movies to like it. It is just an amazing film. I highly, highly recommend it. I'm probably almost certainly going to watch it on the flight home tomorrow. So
it's so good. And here's the thing. It'll start you down a downward spiral of like, you'll go into, for me, I went immediately into like Anna Wintour's whole entire life.
Yeah.
And she has all these documentaries because Meryl Streep does such an amazing job.
Yeah. Capturing... I think it might be Meryl Streep's best performance, which is saying something.
So good. Yeah. Absolutely. Absolutely.
Cool.
Yeah.
Well, man, this was super fun.
So
I'm
fun.
Glad we could sit down and do this. And
yes.
It's always fun when we come out to LA to get to hang out and, talk watches, photography, everything else, Rick and Morty.
Thank you. Yes, I love it. Thank you guys so much for having me again. And
it was a treat.
Yeah, it was really, it was a treat for me as well. And yeah, thank you.
Thank you again to Keegan and James for joining us. This week's episode was produced by Grayson Korhonen and was recorded at the Network Studios in Los Angeles, California. Please remember to subscribe and to rate the show. Thank you for listening, and we'll see you next week.